In the ancient court of law, verdicts were given out by one of two stones that would be handed to you. If you were given a white stone, you were declared innocent. If you were given a black stone, it meant that you were guilty. It's not by accident that as you came in here tonight, all of you picked up a black stone. I don't believe any of us would argue with the verdict. We know that we're guilty. We know the lies that we've told. We know the hurts that we've inflicted. We know our own shortcomings, our own sin, so we won't argue with the guilty verdict that's been handed down to us. But the black stone is not so that you wallow in guilt and shame. It's given to you so that you can know the power of what Jesus accomplished on this day. It's so that you can know that as we recognize our guilt and our sin, that we see the magnitude of God's love for us as He lays that out for us. Tonight, we're going to look at more than just the death of Jesus, but we're going to see a contrast between Jesus and the rest of mankind. Really, what it is a contrast between how God originally created us to be and who we're supposed to be and who we actually are because of our sin and our fallen nature. You see, Jesus is the Son of God, but Jesus also is the Son of Mary. He's true God and He's true man. There's good news and there's bad news to that. The good news is that Jesus is actually one of us. We don't have a God who is far away and distant, who doesn't understand us and is detached, but we have a God who actually lived among us, became one of us, is like us, in every way, except for one. He never sinned. That means in Jesus, what we see is what humanity was supposed to be, how we were supposed to act, how we were supposed to live. So in Jesus, as we see Him moving among people, His attitude, His compassion, His love, His actions, His relationship with His Father in heaven, that's all what we should have been, except for the sin that infected us. In a few moments, we'll hear some paired readings. They will illustrate the contrast between Jesus and the rest of us. We'll see the magnitude of just how far we have fallen and just how much God loves us. He loves us enough that in spite of our sin, the Father will watch as His Son dies. And because of our sin, Jesus will lay down His life and spill His blood for us. Some of the readings might make you feel rather uncomfortable, especially if you allow yourself to identify with those in the reading. And that's actually what I'd ask you to do, to put yourself into the reading, to identify with those who are there. So instead of saying, "How could they do such things?" each of us should ask ourselves, "How could we do such things?" For in seeing the contrast between Jesus and us, how far we have fallen, and how much that He loves us, we'll see the power of the cross and the power of what Jesus accomplished on this day. For now, I'm going to ask you to hold on to your black stone. I'd ask, don't put it down beside you. Don't put it in your pocket. Instead, hold it. Let it be a constant reminder, a tangible object. Because tonight, we confront our guilt. We confront our shame and our regret, and we confront our sin. We do so so that we can leave it at the cross. Listen now to the contrast.
For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. And his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. And with his stripes we are healed. While walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." Immediately they left their nets and followed him. And going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, in the boat with Zebedee their father, mending their nets. And he called them. Immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. While he was still speaking, Judas came, one of the 12, and with him a great crowd with swords and clubs from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now the betrayer had given them a sign, saying, "The one I will kiss is the man, seize him." And he came up to Jesus at once and said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and he kissed him. Jesus said to him, "Friend, do what you came to do." Then they came up and laid hands on Jesus and seized him. Then all the disciples left him and fled. And when he was 12 years old, they went up according to custom. And when the feast was ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. Now the chief priests and the whole council were seeking false testimony against Jesus that they might put him to death, but they found none, though many false witnesses came forward. At last two came forward and said, "This man said, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and to rebuild it in 3 days.'" And the high priest stood up and said, "Have you no answer to make? What is it that these men testify against you?" But Jesus remained silent. And the high priest said to him, "I adjure you, by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God." Jesus said to him, "You have said so. But I tell you, from now on you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his robes and said, "He has uttered blasphemy. What further witnesses do we need? You have now heard this blasphemy. What is your judgment?" They answered, "He deserves death." And he said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a desolate place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. Now at the feast, he used to release for them one prisoner for whom they asked. And among the rebels in prison who had committed murder in the insurrection, there was a man called Barabbas. And the crowd came up and began to ask Pilate to do as he usually did for them. And he answered them, saying, Do you want me to release for you the King of the Jews? For he perceived that it was out of envy that the chief priests had delivered him up. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have him release for them Barabbas instead. And Pilate again said to them, Then what shall I do with the man you call the King of the Jews? And they cried out again, Crucify him. And Pilate said to them, Why, what evil has he done? But they shouted all the more, Crucify him. So Pilate, wishing to satisfy the crowd, released for them Barabbas, and having scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments and, taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. When he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the governor's headquarters, and they gathered the whole battalion before him. And they stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him, and twisting together a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and put a reed in his right hand. And kneeling before him, they mocked him, saying, Hail, King of the Jews! And they spit on him and took the reed and struck him on the head. And when they had mocked him, they stripped him of the robe and put his own clothes on him and led him away to crucify him.
Contrast is rather obvious, isn't it? Between Jesus and the rest of mankind. We see the depth of our sin and the magnitude of his love. We see how far we have fallen, and we see how far he will go to bring us back. This is why Jesus came. All of history led up to this moment, to this day when he would lay down his life. For Jesus knew that he and he alone could step in and take our place, because only God could endure the pain, but only man could step in and take our place. So Jesus willingly takes the nails of the cross so that you can know the freedom of the empty tomb. It's here at the cross, that we leave it all behind. We leave our guilt, our shame, our regrets, our sin. It's all left here at the foot of the cross. So what will you leave behind? Before you leave here this evening, what will you leave behind at the cross, never to be taken up again? Is it something from your past? We all have things from our past that we regret, that we're ashamed of. Maybe it was a choice we made in our youth. Maybe it was a bad decision that we made, a relationship that we threw away, words that we knew cut somebody to the heart. Is it something that has happened maybe days ago, weeks ago, years ago, decades ago? What is it that haunts you at night? What is it that creeps into your brain? What is it that's on your conscience. Leave it at the cross. I know it's not easy to bring up memories from the past, especially when we feel the guilt and the shame of what we've done. But I invite you to look at the man on the cross. Look at the love in his eyes. Look at what he has done for you. And heed his invitation. Leave the past behind. Leave it at the cross. Maybe the past isn't the problem. It's the present. It isn't the deeds from yesterday. It's the deeds from today. Is there something that you're caught up into and that you know full well that you need to stop, but so far you've been unsuccessful? Is there some pattern in life that you keep falling into that's self-destructive and you know that it's not pleasing to God? Has an addiction got a hold of you that you need to kick? Is there a lifestyle that you're leading which you know isn't right and it isn't in line with God? Is there something you're caught in today that you need to leave behind? Well, I know it's not easy. Because if you leave it behind, that means you have to admit it. You have to own up to your own actions. And yet Jesus bids you to come, to know the freedom and the power of the cross. He knows that it doesn't end tonight, that there'll still be struggles in the future. But he promises to go with you. He promised to give you his Spirit, to give you strength. Is that what you need to leave at the cross? Maybe it's not the past, maybe it's not the present, maybe it's simply the worry and anxiety of life that seems to be mounting greater and greater on all of us. Are you worried about the world? Are you worried about the country, your life, your family, your grandkids, your health? There's a whole plethora of things that we can lose sleep over and that we can have anxious thoughts over, and all of them are valid. All of them are legitimate concerns. But if they're taking control of your life, are they eating you up? Wouldn't you rather leave them behind? Leave them at the cross? Listen to the promise of the man on the cross who says, "Never will I leave you, never will I forsake you." No matter what the world throws at you, no matter what it is that you're stressed out about, he says, "I'm there with you." Now leave it. Leave it at the cross and be free of it. You know, so far, we've talked about leaving things behind that we would gladly and willingly leave behind. Well, maybe it takes courage on our part or strength or conviction, but we'd willingly leave it behind. I suspect that there's more than a few of us, though, that have things that we know that we should leave behind, that we know is wrong, that we know is harmful, but we don't want to leave it behind. If we leave it behind, we leave it behind unwillingly because we still want to hold on to it. Perhaps this black stone is kind of an illustration of that. You know, there's two ways that you could have been holding the stone so far in the service. You could do it like I did. I was clutching it in my hand. And the longer that I held it in my hand, the more uncomfortable it became. Not to be too descriptive, but my hand got all sweaty. And I didn't like it. I'd like to get rid of it. But maybe you didn't hold it so tight, you held it loosely. Maybe you started rubbing your thumb across it and it was smooth, even comforting and soothing. And you're not so sure you want to give it up. And not so sure you want to leave it behind. There's things like that in our life. Maybe it's something that we enjoy. Maybe it's something that we find pleasure in. Maybe Satan has convinced you that it's not that bad, that it doesn't hurt anyone else, so why leave it behind? You'll never know freedom. You'll never know what it is to be the person that God created you to be until you leave it behind. I'm not saying that it will be easy. I'm not saying that the days ahead will be easy. Because maybe you're afraid by leaving it behind, you're not sure how you'll cope. You're not sure how you'll act because it's got that much of a hold on you. But you'll never know the freedom that's found, the freedom that was won on the cross until you let it go. See all that God has done for you. Is there anything that He won't do for you? Is there any challenge that He won't help you overcome? But it begins. It begins when we leave it at the cross. What will you leave at the cross tonight? For some of you, you've been contemplating it since Sunday. Others of you just over the last few moments. But either way, what is it that you have on your mind and on your heart that you want to leave behind at the cross? Let this black stone, this verdict of guilty, let this be symbolic of what you leave behind. And now let's make it real and tangible. And let's leave the black guilty verdict at the foot of the cross, because Jesus says, "Bring it to me. I've already handled it. I gave my life for it." Leave it at the foot of the cross, never to be picked up again. But His love is even stronger than that, because if we're tempted and if we fail and we pick it up again, Jesus says, "Bring it back." Because every day we can leave it at the cross. Every day we can experience His freedom and love. Tonight, let's make that real for you. Come forward. Leave your guilty stone at the foot of the cross. The ushers aren't going to come forward. It's more when you feel moved to get up. My only direction to you is to enter through the center, leave it at the cross, and then exit on one of the sides. But when you feel ready, take this guilt, take the sin and the regret, and leave it at the cross.